It is November 15, 2023. It is time for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show AEW Dynamite Review. I'm Mr. Warren Hayes, and this is, as advertised, the AEW Dynamite Review. Hope you are having a lovely week so far. I know I am. Apologies for coming in so late with the review. I had mentioned it on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper this week that it was going to be a little late, not in the usual spot, you know, the mid afternoon kind of thing. I didn't expect it to come in this late. Nothing serious, just, you know, stuff happening, work occupations taking over and things of the like. So not that, you know, no disasters, no catastrophes, but not to say that I am not a little surprised that this is not that it took so long. But here we are. The important thing is that you're getting your money's worth, and I hope I can deliver on that front. That's my job at this point. Hopefully the wait was worth it for this Dynamite review. If you already think that if you want to be indulgent and be nice and cool about it, you can already leave a like on the video here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, or a 5-star rating on Spotify, wherever you're watching, listening to this right now. A little help like that would be great. But nonetheless, thank you very much for having me in your ears. So we are going to be talking about the November 15 Dynamite that happened in Ontario, California at the Toyota Center. But I want to point out a little tidbit just before we get into the nitty gritty, right? Before we sell ourselves to the higher powers here. Tony Khan on last night's Dynamite, before last night's Dynamite, actually, he tweeted out a very interesting little tidbit in regards to Full Gear this weekend. Let me read the thing for you. I won't read the whole thing because it, you know, it ends up with, hey, see you tonight, Dynamite on TBS, you know, whatever. AEW has agreed to terms with one of the world's best wrestlers, a pro who is known and respected by virtually AEW fan. They'll come to LA to sign their contract this Saturday, November 18, on pay-per-view at Full Gear. So that has thrown the speculation doors wide open. Well, you know, look, it's not going to be Kota Ibushi who got the graphic. Yeah, or if it is, it's topsy-turvy land where you know, he shouldn't have announced it before doing the thing. And quite frankly, between, you know, all of us hanging around right now, I don't think Kota Ibushi would be worth the major signing segment at a pay-per-view anymore. You know, if we go back to 2018 Kota Ibushi, 2019 Kota Ibushi, but yeah, hell yeah, okay, this is a big fucking deal. But at this point, and you know, we'll talk about Kota Ibushi again a little later on. No, I don't. You know, it wouldn't have been worth the squeeze. But this is a moot point that we're discussing because it's not going to be Kota Ibushi, right? So there's a lot of speculation going around. A lot of the names, there are a few names being tossed around. Two of them specifically, I find, are very interesting and that make a lot of sense. The first one being Mercedes Moné. Mercedes has been hovering around the AEW verse for a while now. You know, we saw her at Wembley, and you know, we know there's interest. We know there's communication. We know there's been contact with Tony. There's a certain level of speculation that had she not got hurt early this summer, that she would have, or like this spring, early this summer, you know what I mean, she would have probably debuted by now, we probably would have had her already doing stuff in AEW's women's division. So that's one thing. The other little bit of speculation, of course, is Will Ospreay, which I feel completely, you know, which I feel truly hits the mark if you want to make a, you know, a free agent signing spot moment event on your pay-per-view show. You're not doing this if you're signing fucking Flip Gordon, right? You're doing this for a massive star. Mercedes fits the bill, but I would even go as far as signing Will Ospreay would be an even bigger deal. And I think it makes even more sense because of how coveted he is, because how much of his, you know, his future endeavors are being discussed right now. You know, it's a hot news item. Where is Will Ospreay going to land? You know, the rumors that his contract is up in February. So, you know, there's a lot. So, you know, at the same time, there's that thing where it's like, well, maybe it's too soon to be signing, but maybe there's been some kind of arrangement that has come through. Maybe at this point, this is all show. Maybe Tony and Will have a handshake agreement and everything has been above board with New Japan. Look, you know, healthy relationships can foster these types of environments where it's like, yeah, you know, you can't wrestle for them, but if you want to do an appearance, yes, you can, you know, kind of thing. And New Japan is okay with this. And, you know, we're not saying that he's going to immediately jump in. And maybe this whole contract stuff is just a lot of hooey. Maybe it's just a lot of, you know, a lot of patootoos. Maybe it's, you know, it could absolutely be just a whole, a whole lot of nothing, you know, a big old pile of nothing burgers. I don't know. It will be, you know, regardless though, if you do have the opportunity to make a big deal out of the signing of Will Ospreay, you not only jump on it, you smother it, that would mean that you'd be killing it. You jump on it, you marry it, you make it an honest free agent. You make a big deal out of the signing because he is currently, and I mean, probably over the past few years, he's the biggest free agent that is available right now. Like, you know, it baffles my mind when it's like, when I see reports from folks saying, oh, WWE has shown interest, and people are going, oh, WWE has shown interest. I'm like, fuck yeah, WWE has shown interest. What are we talking about? It's Will Ospreay. Quite arguably, probably very justifiably, the greatest pro wrestler on planet Earth right now. So, you know, what's the next step going to be for him? That's the big question. You know, all signs point to him leaving New Japan. He's all but said, you know, he actually said the words, you know, every promo he does, every time he speaks it at New Japan, it's always like, well, you know, my time's wrapping up here, you know, kind of thing. Like it feels like the end is nigh for Will in New Japan. So I don't think that's up to be contested. Will he go to WWE? Will he go to AEW? Which are two valid choices for a pro wrestler of his stature, his magnitude. I'll tell you, and I've said, I'm on the record for this, I don't think there's a better landing spot for him. I really don't. You know, if he goes to WWE, he will make a shitload of money, but the Will Ospreay that we knew and loved is gone, effectively. You will never see him wrestle again like he's wrestled over the past year, 2 years, 5 years, go as far as you want. If he goes to AEW, well, there's a, you know, absolutely a chance that the work rate will still be there. If I'm Tony Khan, I'm breaking the bank to bring him in. Fuck Kota Ibushi, you know. If I'm making money to bring in, Adam Copeland, and I don't break the bank to bring in Will Ospreay, it's just malpractice. But I don't think I don't think creatively right now AEW is in a spectacular place. I don't know how Will Ospreay is going to fit into all of this. However, if the idea is to bring him in and start off with showing off, thumping your chest, We're the guys who signed Will Ospreay. Everyone wanted him, but boom, it's us that landed the boy, that landed the Billy Goat. It's us. I think that's something you should do. Should you do it for Mercedes Moné as well? Yes. However, and bear with me here, there is much less speculation as to whether or not Mercedes Moné will be ending up in WWE. I'm not saying that she won't. I'm saying that currently there's much less speculation. There's much less hype around Mercedes going back to WWE. So the suspense isn't as dramatic. It's not as big. You know, the signature, whoever signs Will Ospreay, scores a massive W for not only getting a super contracted, a super talented pro wrestler, a guy for the ages, a legitimate legend already, but they will also have struck a tremendous blow to the other guys. Just as simple and smooth as that. And it will also be interesting just how far, TKO is willing to go with this. Maybe they're, because this is still a thing that we haven't really seen since TKO has come together. You know, contract seasons and free agent signings and all that. How much of the WWE approach will continue now that WWE is owned by Endeavor, and Endeavor with UFC and in regards to his signings has somewhat of a different approach. That will be interesting to see how that situation is broached as well. But you can be sure, rest assured, AEW, WWE are throwing him tons of money. It's going to be a question of who will win him over, who will sway Will over to their side. And if Tony has done it, and everything is kosher with New Japan to make the announcement, and everyone's chill with it because Tony feels like he needs to get some hype back on the train. He needs to get some attention refocused, and these are promotional tactics. This is fine. And if everyone's okay with it, hell yeah, make a big deal out of it. Have Will Ospreay come out, sign his promo in front of 11,000, 12,000 fans. There's going to be a lot of people at Full Gear, which is good, by the way. Have him come out there, have people go nuts, let him cut a promo, bruv, and all that shit, and tally-ho, we'll see you in February or something, once I'm done with Wrestle Kingdom. And then maybe it starts making sense as to why we added, when I say we, I mean them, Dave Finley to the triple three-way match, the triangle match that they set up at Wrestle Kingdom for the whatever the fuck the next title is going to be, the next secondary title, the not intercontinental title, right? Maybe that starts making sense because maybe our boy TK is like, hey, you know what? I want to save the Ospreay Mox match for the home front. Yeah, of course, the other explanation is WWE doesn't want their guy to lose to an AEW guy. It's not a shoe-in either way. It's still very dramatic and very interesting to follow. There are still many paths here. But my gut says, my pure instinct gut, if you are making time on a pay-per-view to announce the signing of a big-time free agent, one that is one of the world's best wrestlers, a professional who is known and virtually respected by every AEW fan. If you're doing that, you're making that announcement. It looks like Will Ospreay. It smells like Will Ospreay. It tastes like Will Ospreay. Never mind what I just said there. And so it will probably be Will Ospreay. If it's Mercedes Moné, I think it's a great announcement nonetheless. But I think in the context right now, may feel like a little bit of a letdown. Just a little bit of a letdown, you know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to poo-poo on the idea of Mercedes Moné having some dates with AEW. That's not what I'm saying. But in the context, because you have to keep this in this context here, where the talk of the town is Will Ospreay's contract, and you're coming out saying, big time pro wrestler, loved by all, is coming to AEW, and we're gonna make time on the pay per view to trot him out. you know, and make a show out of it. If it's not Will Ospreay, I'm sorry. If it's not Will Ospreay, anything else is a disappointment. Mercedes is close to being, but again, it's a question of context. If we weren't talking about Will Ospreay or his contract was settled and all of that, then if it was Mercedes Moné, everyone would be like, that's fantastic. And if it's anyone else, like anyone else, if it's Flip Gordon, if it's Hammerstone, then it's like, womp womp, they're like instantly. Like it is a complete failure to deliver. So it's either one of those two that we have, you know, that he has up his sleeve. Again, and I want to make sure that I'm clear here. If it's Will Ospreay, I think it's the most logical slot. It's the most logical explanation to why he's doing this. And if it's Mercedes Moné, it's still very logical. But in the context, it feels a little off. I think it's just setting people up for a little bit of disappointment, maybe irritation. Maybe they'll be like, well, I mean, she's big, but not that big. You see what I mean? Like, this is the type of analysis I'm going to be expecting once it's all said and done. And this is on the promoter's fault. Has nothing to do with Mercedes. She's juxtaposed to the greatest wrestler alive on planet Earth right now being wooed by two major league North American companies. And that his landing spot is a huge talking point and a huge story in pro wrestling and has been for weeks. Does that make sense? Hope so. Because I'm not going through all of that again. I'm not re-explaining it again. I had a delicious beef basil meal this evening from a brand new Asian place just right up the street from where I live. Delicious, beautifully cooked rice, sauteed vegetables. Just but very spicy. So I've been chugging water. I might have to run away to urinate. Things keep going here. But let's get into the show itself proper. 3,429 people were in the Toyota Arena last night see this. And this is a tremendous... this is a tremendous drop from the last time that that they were in Ontario, California. Let me see if I can pull it up here so I don't say complete nonsense. Let me see. It was at the Toyota Arena, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, the last time they were here, which was... Sorry, that's... No, it would have been last year. In 2021, when they were here, 7,922 distributed tickets. Of course, all of this, according to WrestleTix. Then in 2022, May 2022, 7,540 tickets. And we're in the Bucks' hometown here. At least, like, what? It's very close, right? Rancho Cucamonga, which is an actual place. It's not like these weird ass like little towns that they create in children's shows, you know. Rancho Cucamonga is not far from Ontario, and you know Papa Buck was there, and you know all the supporters, and they got probably some of the biggest reactions of the night. But you know, 3,429. Look. This is what I mean, and here's what, we're going into full gear. Just bear with me for a second here. We're going into full gear this weekend, and they'll probably make 11,000, you know, they have a shot for 12,000 people in the arena, which is tremendous, which is what you want for your big shows. Don't get me wrong, you know, that's what you want. And you know, week after week, I have people going, 4,000 tickets. Good job, AEW. 5,000. Wow, they're doing so great. And I'm like, why are we patting ourselves on the back here when we are a quarter or a, you know, a fourth. That's right. A quarter is a fourth, Warren. We're filling out basketball arenas to a fourth of their capacity. Why are we going around going, fantastic work? You know? So, because then when we turn around and we look at the tickets for Full Gear and we're like, damn, that's pretty good. Now we're talking. Then you're like, it's meaningful. We're not just cheering on everyone just for the sake of cheering them on. 3,000, under 3,500 tickets in the Bucks' hometown, which is effectively half of what they did the two previous times they were here in Ontario, California, is not good. And there's no way to spin this. There's no way to turn this back and forth in your brain. And maybe there's a bit of a bump. Maybe there's actually, well, it went down a bit from last week. We did better numbers last week. Whatever it was, it didn't work. And this is not a good house. We have to stop being congratulatory for everything. This was not great. Let's be congratulatory when there's significant upticks, when we get a true pattern of growth, of success. This is not it. I would assume they're disappointed. Why wouldn't they? Again, they're like basically in the, you know, you can probably see the Bucks pool from where they are. In Rancho Cucamonga. Anyway, the show starts off with a recap of the devil stuff from last week and people being thrown through windows, and we're still trying to establish that the devil has attacked so many people so often, when in fact he's only attacked, the devil has only attacked two people, or yeah, well, in two instances. Once was against Jay White, and the other one was against the Acclaim. So let's not start pretending that this is a thing, okay? But anyway, we're doing this recap, so I'm like, oh, so already, like, I'm on my guard. Already I'm on the defensive, and I hate that, and I really don't like it, but immediately, like, twists a knot in my stomach, and then I'm like, okay, am I going to be in for a crappy evening of pro wrestling? Thankfully not. Just spoiler alert, I didn't hate this show. But it leads us into John Moxley and Wheeler Yuta defeating Orange Cassidy and Hook. I enjoyed this enough. I thought this was pretty good. First of all, before we go any further, terrible crowd last night. Like, outside of the Bucks stuff, just a bad crowd. This was not a good crowd. I don't know what to tell you. They just were not into AEW Dynamite. All 3,429 of them. But the baby faces, they take it to the BCC while they're doing their entrance. So, you know, all right, I'm like, okay. I'm already forgetting the recap. And I'm like, all right, sweet. We've got matches. We got violence. This is what we have going here. We have the unexpected happening. Cool. And this has been, this was very good. Orange Cassidy eats a bunch of shit, and Hook is alone for a good majority of the match. You know, Hook right now, here's what I find interesting. I find that Hook has improved dramatically. I think he's a much better pro wrestler. I think he gets it. I think he wants to do it. I think he likes it. I'm not sure that everyone on this roster does. But I think he's been improving quite a bit, and I find like his few last exits have been particularly good. Of course, he's always surrounded with very talented people, but isn't that how you're supposed to improve? If you always have people wrestle with shit wrestlers, they're going to stay shit wrestlers. As much as I still think that the pairing of Orange Cassidy and Hook looks bad on Orange Cassidy, makes him feel like a lower mid-card guy again, as opposed to being elevated, I understand the pairing. Cassidy has a great brain to put matches together. I mean, you know, he's done some match agenting or producing or whatever you want to call it. So having him, having Hook shadow him to a degree, I think is a tremendous tremendous idea, and especially a guy who knows how to project a character, project his presence, right? Which is something that Hook is very close to getting, and we're very, very close to a lot of things in regards to Hook. And he's still green, don't get me wrong, but I'm on the verge of dropping the green thing just because I find that he's holding more and more of his own. I think his offense is looking better and crisper. There's still a couple of moments where you know you can tell, right? Like he doesn't know how to fill the in-betweens, right? Fill the moments between landing a move and going to the other move, whether it be a crowd reaction, whether it be some psychology. You know, there's still holes in his game, but they're not as glaring as they once were. You know, we talk a lot about Julia Hart. We talk a lot about the Acclaimed. And I'm excited, yeah, as you know, AEW success stories, like true homegrown success stories. I'm excited to add Hook to that conversation. And I think we're well on our way. I think he's too talented. I think he gets it too much. Now, the interesting part here is that I find that he's on television more and in more significant matches and angles and situations ever since he stopped being, I don't know, pushed. Does that make sense? You remember, you know, there was a time where, you know, just Hook show, you know, they'd make a thing out of Hook just showing up, you know, just being there, and he'd have this mystique, this, you know, this strong silent type in the corner, and they built off of that, and now that they, not that he's not pushed, he's, you know, he's a champion, but I'm having difficulty trying to, you know, convey what I'm thinking here. He's felt hotter. How about that? Like he was put on TV more back in the days that he couldn't wrestle well. And now it's kind of the opposite. If that makes any sense at all. I thought he looked very good in this match. But again, like I said, you know, he's standing toe-to-toe with Jon Moxley. You know, I didn't hate that little moment between Mox and him. And I'm like, give Hook another year, 2 years, and let's get the Jon Moxley one-on-one, right? That'll be, you know, we'll see how where the kid is at, because Mox will give him a lot. Mox will give him tons. You know, and he's with Orange Cassidy. Like, he cannot not grow. And even if this you know, look, there's a lot of great stuff here, you know, happening, and ultimately it's a Death Rider followed by the seatbelt pin by Wheeler Yuta that gets the job done for the heels. Well, for BCC, I don't know if you call them heels outright, the tweeners. Even if we get, even wrestling Wheeler Yuta, you know, Yuta, who has, yes, he's young, but has years upon years upon years of experience, and who is already a tremendous pro wrestler, having a nice little match with Hook at the buy-in at Full Gear for the FTW title, I can think of worse matches. I can absolutely think of worse matches. That'd be pretty fun, actually. During the course of this match, Orange Cassidy orange punched Moxley, who completely no-sold it. Like, completely no-sold it. And that really rattled Cassidy to the point that he couldn't recover and get the match and help Hook win the match. But, and you know, that's where we're going here. And he was clearly rattled after the match. Jon Moxley cuts a promo saying about how he's going to grind him into dust, right? And that it's time for a realignment. What was the word he used? It's time for a course correction. You know, we know what they're referencing to. I mean, you know, the with the injuries and all that. So it's very interesting to me that, you know, that Orange Cassidy has been rattled again. Because look, as I talked about on the podcast this week, previewing the show, and I'm not going to do a full gear preview here, but Mox, I think the bold decision, everyone's expecting Orange Cassidy to win, but the bold, truly creative decision is to have John Moxley win. I want Orange Cassidy to have an issue trying to beat John Moxley. I want this. And you know, we've talked about it in the past when he got injured and what. He should lose at Full Gear, here being Orange Cassidy. He should lose at Full Gear and now disappear for a while. You know, maybe Orange Cassidy has lost his mojo, right? And it happens to the best of us, right? It happens to, you know, hockey players. It happens to pro wrestlers. It happens to, you know, marketing executives. It happens to everyone, where whatever made you special, you know, that little juice, that little something that gave you all your great ideas or whatever, and, you know, made you shine, at some point, oh, you sort of lose it. So then you move away, you go do something else, you recalibrate, you recenter yourself, you get inspired doing something else, and then you come back and then boom, you know. I think that's a compelling story to tell. And it's one that we have not had in a while. I would have no issues with this if Orange were to lose again, but take the boy off TV. Take him off television till it's time for Revolution, because I swear the day he comes back, that audience blows their mind. They tear the roof off the building. I feel like, look, Orange Cassidy is already one of the most over stars in the company. He's a big star for the company. And I think he could be one of the top guys if he was booked properly. And I think taking him off TV, letting him go off and just recenter himself or whatever, and then have Mox, you know, tear through a bunch of people, only like for him in February for him to pop back on TV and just beeline for Mox, crowd's gonna go nuts, right? Because it's all part, because this is what's happening here, right? Cassidy, is his character is transforming. He's no longer, you know, just this exclusively, oh, whatever guy. No, he gets fired up in the ring. The, you know, the soft kicks in the ring, they turn into hard ones. You know, they turn into fiery kicks. He's in a transformative moment, and maybe he just doesn't know how to deal with it. Maybe he doesn't know how it transforms him into a new wrestler. So he needs to go off and recalibrate. I think that's fair. I think that's a good angle. And then he comes back and then he beats Mox. And he wins the feud. You know, the moral aspect. He finally beats John Moxley. He overcomes his kryptonite, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Because right now, John Moxley is his kryptonite. He can't land his finisher on him. Moxley no-sells his finisher. What the fuck is he going to do? I'm fully expecting Orange Cassidy to retain. But if I had the AEW of old standing right before me with the long-term planning and not the, you know, the haphazard slapdash decision-making that has been happening for the past 6 to 7 months now, I would have very much faith that they would have Orange Cassidy lose, but I don't know. I think he's going to win. And I'll be fine too. Don't get me wrong. But there's just a better story to tell than to wrap it up there. You know what I mean? Tony Schiavone's in the ring for the Adam Page Swerve Strickland face-to-face. He establishes very clearly that neither man can touch each other, lay their hands on one another. Otherwise, they will both be suspended for the rest of the year. And ergo, the match at Full Gear will not happen. Nice little thing that both gentlemen respected here. As they're both in the ring, Page just yanks the microphone out of Tony Schiavone's hand, calls Swerve a coward, a fraud, a phony, and a grade A dumbass. dumber today than when he got fired 2 years ago. History. He said 2 months ago, Swerve said 2 months ago that he wanted to be world champion, but Adam Page could see it in him that he doesn't have it, that he doesn't have it in him. He doesn't have that dog in him, as the kids like to say. He's not the man he thinks he is. That's why his fiance left him and his kids won't talk to him. Heyo. And Paige's like, look, you made this personal, pal. So let's fucking go. I'm okay with this. Fired up promo by Adam Page, who also goes, he starts talking about, how Nana comes out here, does his little dance. Because, you know, Swerve doesn't surround himself with friends, right? With yes men and hangers on or whatever, right? And Nana's just using him. He comes out and does a little funny dance and sells his t-shirts, makes a living off of Strickland's back, and goes down to the parking lot and spends his money buying weed from high school kids. He's got a big reaction from the crowd, but not as big as when Paige said that after he beats Swerve, he's going to beat Nana's ass and steal his weed. What the hell are we talking about here? Funny as fuck. Don't get me wrong. I hope this is not one of these things where reality is stranger than fiction here. They talk a little more. Then he drops the mic. He being Adam Page drops the mic. And then he goes, no. Picks it up again. Wait, I'm not done. And he said, I know the stipulation you said that I couldn't. I couldn't hit you, but that doesn't mean I can't hit Nana. And then he just unloads on Prince Nana. And Swerve is like, no, I can't touch him. But then there's security to come in and break it apart. And eventually Swerve drags Nana out of the ring. And I thought this was fun. Good little fiery promo segment. And Paige was so pissed off, didn't leave not even a second of Swerve for Swerve to jump in and say something. I thought this was tremendous. I said it on the preview. This is the match I'm most looking forward to at Full Gear. This is going to rock. I'm excited. Added a little more. I like me a fiery, fired up Adam Page. It's good stuff. We get Roderick Strong and the Kingdom backstage. They're doing bullshit with Adam Cole on the screen again. Who cares? Who cares? Who could possibly care? I promise you, Adam, that it's MJF who is the devil. Adam! Thankfully, all of this nonsense was at a bare minimum tonight. This is the only time just a dash. We just got a dash of it. I'm fine with that. Then we had the AEW TBS Eliminator match. Do we find out who would be the third person to join Chris Statlander, the TBS champion, and Julia Hart at Full Gear in the three-way match? And it was between Sky Blue and Red Velvet. Sky Blue defeated Red Velvet. And folks, this stunk. This was a bad match. And you can clap politely all you like. This was not, objectively speaking, this was not good. And they're whiffing kicks. They're whiffing kicks. And they're selling whiffed kicks. You know, they do this one spot where they do stereo kicks. And Red Velvet completely misses Sky Blue. There's another spot where Velvet misses... it's Sky Blue completely misses Red Velvet, but then Red Velvet at some point also does a kick and completely misses Sky Blue to the point that Sky Blue sells it. You know, like that referee in that TNA clip, you know, that imaginary ref bump. Remember that one? And the finish was completely botched. This was bad. This was... You know what I found out today? I found out that the only person who has wrestled more matches... Excuse me. Let me start that over. Orange Cassidy is the wrestler who in AEW has wrestled the most matches this year. You know who the second person is? Sky Blue. Now, you know what I like to say here? And I've been saying this for as long, I do believe as long as I've been doing this shit. The only way that a wrestler is going to improve is if they wrestle, right? And I say that often. Of course, there's always, you know, nuances and whatnot. But the basic gist, and I think everyone agrees with that, the only way you're going to get better is if you wrestle. If you never fucking wrestle, you never get better. So isn't that the same thing in sports in general, right? If you never play, you will never improve at your position in your sport, right? Sky Blue has had the second largest amount of matches in 2023. And she is not improving. Like, at some point. Look, we talked about it with in regards to Hook. We have Hook and Julia Hart, right? Who just came up through the system, and you can see the improvements. They're not finished products, either or. But you can see the improvements. You can be like, ah, all right, okay, I get it. Is Sky Blue, at her very young age, despite the fact that she does have many, many years in front of her, is she at a moment in her career where we're already talking about what you see is what you get? Has she hit her ceiling? Which is possible, which is shocking. But it is possible. Maybe she is a Weissy wig at this point. You know, usually, we'll start talking about, you know, Weissy wig wrestlers when they start hitting 30. When we start getting, a little up there. You know, like Hikuleo in New Japan, you know, where people are like, oh, he'll improve, he'll get better. Brother's over 30. At this point, what you see is what you get. Now, unless something completely flips, clicks, unless she starts, you know, unless she gets possessed by the demon of Carl Gotch, and we choose not to exorcise her because her matches become too good, I don't know what's, I don't know what to do with her. And for every moment, every match where I go, yeah, you know what? Sky Blue looked pretty good here. There's three others where I go, God damn. The hell is she doing? And look, this match stunk. And I'm not throwing Red Velvet under the bus, though she held up her own in stinky poopootude. That's an actual word, I'm sure. Let's submit it to Webster's for Word of the Year 2023. Stinky poopootude. I'm a grown man. Red Velvet. She came. Look, she's off the heels of a very good match with. Was it Statlander? No, who did she have her match with last week? On Collision. I'm drawing a complete blank. I apologize. Maybe it was. I don't know. But I was like, Willow, right? Was it Willow? Fuck, I'm drawing a complete blank. But I know she had a better match than this, and she has better matches in her than this. You know, she's been injured. She's back. Little ring rust to work off. I like Red Velvet. I always have. I understand. She was also a product that they molded, you know, made their own. But I don't see it happening with Sky Blue. I'm sorry. I think I might be officially off the Sky Blue train. We get a video package for Moreau and how CJ Perry brings out brings the worst out of herself and the people around her, and the ergo himself as well. You know, I feel like we've had a conversation a couple of years ago about Miro and how we're like, this is good, and we hope we hope that Lana never gets into arm's length of him again because Miro is so good. And I think my fears are coming true. This is kind of dumb, right? It's kind of dumb. And I still don't know. I really do not know what is CJ Perry's apport to AEW. I still do not know what she brings to the table that we didn't have already or that we didn't need. You know? But I'm kind of like, as much as I like the Miro stuff and the Redeemer stuff, and now I'm like, like, why are you, you know, why are you doing this to your wife? Like, I don't know. We get RJ City sneaking Mariah May into Tony Storm's dressing room, and Tony kicks her out because Mariah May is just a mark. She wants autographs of whatever the fuck, and okay, that's fine. There's a theory going around. There's a theory going around that Tony Storm's match against Hikaru Shida this week is going to be shot in the black and white filter. That would be I'm not saying it's something that's going to happen. I said it's a theory. Anyone who cheers for that, I hope, also cheered for, you know, The Fiend when he'd have his matches with the red lights. I hope you were all on the same page with that. Samoa Joe defeated Not Serpentico John Cruz in a squash. After the match, he says, Joe talks about MJF and being his partner again, and he says, you know, whatever the outcome, I'm inevitable. Ooh. Look at him quoting Thanos right and left. Like, if you were to give the Infinity Gauntlet to Samoa Joe, I would absolutely buy that he just snapped the half of the planet out of existence. I don't know if he'd do it. I'm not saying he would. I'm saying I would believe it if he would. I'd be like, yeah, this is he. I absolutely buy into this guy doing that. Absolutely. We get a recap of Tony Khan announcing the Continental Classic. I was excited when they popped the graphic up, because I was rubbing my hands, because like I said on the podcast this week, I want the field announced before the night of November 22nd when the round robin starts. I want the full fucking field announced before it starts. This should not be a slapdash thing. The first way to make this tournament feel important is to make a big deal out of the people that are being added to the tournament. As it stands right now, I have no confidence that AEW is going to do this, and I'm setting myself up for disappointment. But it's on my laundry list. My it's on my list of things that will make the Continental Classic that will make the Continental Classic good, will get me excited. Right now I'm looking forward to it, but God, I have so many reserves. And I wish I didn't have so many reserves in regards to AEW, but they've burnt out a lot of good faith on my part, a lot of goodwill. So we're just rehashing the announce. Again, I can't, this is something I've been clamoring for years now in regards to AEW, a good old fashioned round robin tournament, something really exciting. But I want to know who's in it, because it's who's in it that makes it feel special. Not just feels everything thrown together last minute. I swear to God, if we get the fields announced the night that it starts, I'm like, completely whiffed opportunity. Look, we still have Collision on Friday, and they could actually do the announcement at Full Gear, right? Because it's at a big show, usually, that New Japan does the G1 announcement. People are like, whoa, we got the G1 announcement. And why don't we go, whoa, we got the Continental Classic field. You know, I wish they'd do something to make it feel special. I don't give a shit if they ape the G1 and they have a fucking press conference with all six guys of A block and all six guys of B block. I don't give a shit. That's the kind of thing that will make it special. And most wrestling fans in North America are not familiar with the concept regardless. So it'll be fine. It'll be new for them. Who cares? The pro wrestling copies good ideas from everyone else all the time. And not just within pro wrestling, in pop culture as well. So who cares? The Young Bucks defeated Comandante and Pelta El Zero Miedo. Fun match. I enjoyed this a lot. I would say this was my match of the night. I enjoyed this a lot. Comandante was in perfect form. That off the back destroyer that he did, and the off the shoulders double DDT shit. And I'm like, this fucking guy. But the Bucks have to do low blows to win this one. Shock. So they win the match. BTE trigger follows, and Comandante is dead. Good stuff. Look, I thought this was good stuff. High flying, action packed, spots. Lots of stuff we haven't seen Comandante do either. Good stuff. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this tremendously. My match of the night. Back from commercial, the Bucks are being interviewed backstage. Kenny Omega comes into view, and he's basically disappointed that the Bucks cheated to win, but the Jacksons don't care. And they say, hey, you know, this is when we're at our best. Like, he's not wrong. Then Jericho arrives, calls them kids. That causes a pull apart. The Guns are up next. They defeat handily Jacoby Watts and Peter Avalon. They cut a very generic promo after. Let's keep going. We get a Wardlow video as well. I got no real thoughts here. And then we get to the big match, the video game match. I cannot remember the name of this video game for the life of me. Why can't we just call it the Yakuza game? What is? Oh my god. What is it called again? The Like a Dragon sponsored game, right? Like a Dragon, the man who erased his name, right? It's from Sega video games, from Sega games. I sound like, you know, I'm old and I don't understand this, and I do. I'm just Like a Dragon. That's the name of the series now. It's no longer Yakuza or Yakuza. Shouldn't say it too often. Might get me into trouble. Like a Dragon, chaos game, and also chaos match. Look, this was a match in two halves, which overall I thought was pretty fun. Nothing that I'm going to go nuts about. A couple of really impactful spots, though, in this match, but it was chaos. They did a perfect job in hiding all of Paul White's weaknesses, because I think everyone in their right mind anyway was terrified at the idea of Paul White, you know, hardly mobile, 50 plus year old Paul White, going through a tag team match, even if it was like an eight-man affair. But the way they handled it, you know, everyone went to him, right? Everyone got on the ramp, and he just waited for them at the top of the ramp, where he was getting attacked by Kyle Fletcher and Powerhouse Hobbs, and he chokeslammed Kyle Fletcher off the stage through a table. Dope. Great spot. And then he and Powerhouse Hobbs fight off to the back. Then the match continues in the ring. You get all sorts of stuff happening. The bat was rubber barbed wire again, right? Now, I can't tell you enough how disappointing this shit is, because it's NXT bullshit. You know, that's NXT with their Weapons Wild matches and all that, you know, baby's first plunder match. where they try to make things look hardcore, and then you're like, man, this is a toy. What are you doing? You know? If you're going to do... It's not that I want people to, you know, cut themselves and bleed all over in every match, right? I don't need that in every match. When it happens and it's good, it's great, and it's fantastic. But if you are going to do a barbed wire bat, use fucking barbed wire, okay? Otherwise, don't do it because it looks stupid and it makes me feel like you think I'm an idiot, okay? I think that's fair. Just don't fucking do it. You don't want to, you know, take a big bump off of a, you know, off of a ledge in an arena, and you want to have a big crash pad there waiting for you. If you do, don't do the spot, because you make me look, you make me feel like you think I'm an idiot. Don't do it. So there's all this going on. We go back outside and outside, because Powerhouse Hobbs and Big Show, Paul White, Massive Man, they're fighting around the car. Oh, gee, Willikers, I wonder what's going to happen. Well, probably not this. Powerhouse Hobbs scoops up. There's like a stack of planks, 2x4s, whatever the fuck. And he's on the top. He climbs to the top of the stack with Massive Man, and Hobbs scoop slams Paul White onto the car, onto the windshield, and White tumbles off. Fantastic bump! And an incredible thing for Powerhouse Hobbs to do. You've got Paul White putting the younger guys over. It's like, yeah, brother, you get to slam me. Do it. Fucking great. And then Kota Ibushi he has the bike, he has the 10 speed, and he's doing the DDT bike spot, and he's got a pipe, and he's just like tapping people with the pipe. He's not swinging. You know, it's like soft, but it's not even soft. What is softer than soft? A breeze. You know, it's like, those pipe shots were like a gentle breeze. He's like, he's fucking, you know, the fairy godmother giving the fucking slippers to Cinderella. Boop. Nothing. Anyway, he does eat a fucking lariat from Brian Cage in regards to off the bike, right? That was a good little spot. And then Kenesuke Takeshita, and this I thought was great. He starts swinging the bike at Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega. And I'm like, fuck right. Like this, now this is wild. This is great. And Takeshita brainbusters Ibushi, I believe, on the bike. And I'm like, fuck right. Now, I mentioned Kota Ibushi earlier because he got the graphic. He's All Elite. Tony Khan tweeted that out. But I think the majority of us who are familiar with Kota's work and what he has done in the past, I think at this point in his career, we're all looking at him and going, really? This is not the Kota Ibushi that we once knew. I don't know how much value Kota Ibushi brings, the 2023 Kota Ibushi brings to AEW outside of being a pro wrestler, a bonkers, violent, tremendous pro wrestler a few years ago. How much of a great of a wrestler he was a few years ago, what his value is today when he's walking around the ring, he's skulking around the ring while Kenny Omega's getting the shit beat out of him, and he's got signs and he's cracking the signs over his head, and it's like, what are you doing, Kota? Like, none of this, he's not into it. You know, they do the double triangle moonsault spots, right? The fucking Golden Lovers thing. And Kenny's directing traffic and he couldn't be more clear. He's telling Coda, move the fuck back to the corner. And Coda's sort of like, hey, what you say, bruh? You know, it's like, what are you talking about? He's like, go to the corner. And Coda goes in the corner. He's like, what's going on? And it's super awkward. I don't know if one of the guys was supposed to eat the maybe one of the guys on the outside that was supposed to eat the moonsault wasn't in position, which is possible. Because I felt like people were running around. But Coda seemed completely deer in the headlights again. And this is not the first time we see him in AEW just going, I'm just happy to be here, fellas. I'm getting a paycheck. American dollars. Let's go. I don't know. So, you know, he's with... And he's skulking around the ring for the majority of the match. Like, he's not selling anything. He's just walking around doing... I'm like, I don't get it. I don't see the value in a 2023 Kota Ibushi as a main guy on your roster. And maybe it is, you know, memories of him that are... Maybe a lot of people are clinging to, but this is not your granddad's Kota Ibushi. This is not the guy we knew. This is not the guy who is just completely wild and bonkers in the ring and shows complete disrespect for his body and is crisp and technical and beautiful to watch and violent. You know, one of these total package wrestlers that you just sit in awe and you look at how chiseled his fucking body looks like he's a fucking Greek god. This is not the same guy in any way, shape, or form. I don't know who this, you know, he's like a body snatcher version of Kota Ibushi. You know, Kota Ibushi fell asleep, you know, and the pod swallowed him up, and then body snatched Kota Ibushi was popped out, and he's kind of like him. That's what I'm going to call it, movement. It's Body Snatched Kota Ibushi is who we're dealing with right now. Because I don't know who this guy is. Anyway, there's some dramatic spots here. Brian Cage does an inside-out suplex to Kenny Omega off the apron through a pair of tables on the floor. Just a bonkers spot. And then Kyle Fletcher pile drives Kota Ibushi on, they had these street signs, these street food vendor signs, and set up on some chairs, and he's on the apron, and he just pile drives. I'm like, this is tremendous shit, right? Anyway, Brian Cage tries to save some things, but he gets overwhelmed by Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega, eats the one-winged angel for the win. You know, I thought it was fun. I thought it was chaotic, but, you know, we're keeping it at that. I think a lot of people are overrating this match. A lot of people calling it like it's the, just like AEW back in the day. We have very different memories of AEW back in the day, apparently. I get like it's the chaos, it's the energy of it. And I like these kind of matches. It doesn't bother me. You know, because there's so much stuff happening and then everything sort of gels into a very good finish. Don't get me wrong. Everything, you know, it was a well put together match. Paul White took his bump and he was dead, gone. He pushing up daisies. His spirit left his body. He was gone. They celebrated with the three guys with the Golden Lovers and Jericho. Or should I say the Golden Jets and Ibushi? Pick your poison. And then we get our main event promo. MJF comes to the ring. He says that after the brutal attack on the Acclaim last week, it's become clear that he can't run from his past. I don't know. I feel like he's going too far here. He can't run from his past. And every time he opens himself up to let people in, they get hurt. So he apologizes to the Acclaim. And we're going so deep into this. Here's the thing. If the devil had indeed been attacking friends of MJF over several weeks, then I think we'd have some substance here. Here I feel he's reaching. I think Max is reaching. You know, Adam Cole was not injured because of the devil. Adam Cole was injured because he came in to do a silly spot at the end of a match. He got injured doing it. So, MJF says he always wanted to be a world champion, and now he's at the mountaintop and he's proud that he made it. He said the air is thin up here at the top of the mountain because everyone is coming after me in every direction so that they can push him off the mountain, essentially. He's man enough to admit that he's afraid that he can lose everything he's worked for in the blink of an eye, and he's afraid he's going to let us, aka the fans, down. The old him would have tucked tail and ran, but he's done letting his past dictate his future. So he's afraid. He's not willing to quit. He's not going to give up his spot at the top of the mountain. So yeah. I know a lot of people, not a lot of people, I know some people take umbrage to this. I think that it is refreshing to have a different vision of alpha malehood in television and movies and pro wrestling, you know? We've been served this unique vision of what a dominant man is, you know, in pro wrestling, that in the year 2023, where discourses are different and morality is different and visions about things are different, I think it's refreshing to have vulnerable pro wrestlers. You know, Paige was very good at it. Adam Page. And this is what MJF is doing here. Is it a little too much? Some people, you can argue, well, is he good at it? Is it too much shtick? Well, you know, that's for you to decide. I'm not off-put by this. I don't think it's bad. I think it's interesting. I think it's different. I like, sometimes, you know, I don't like all different, but sometimes some different is very good. I think it's a nice little bend that Max offers as a babyface champion, where we're not subjected to Vince McMahon's absolute vision of alpha male dominance, right? And, you know, you know that you can make it, and it's hard and it's difficult, and it's okay to just, you know, sometimes be like, hey, you know what? This is really fucking hard and it gets me down, man. Which I think is fine because we're fucking human. We're not machines. But the question is he reaching too much for the circumstance? For the story that he's trying to tell here, is he reaching too much? I think a little bit nonetheless. I think he's reaching just a bit. So then he buries Jay White. Well, buries, you know, he talks shit on Jay White. That'd be more appropriate. And then he says, you know, to the man who stole his devil mask and his, and has been using, you know, the putties, when he finds out who you are, and he will, there will be hell to pay. Jay White comes out, and Jay White just cuts a killer promo. Just once again, Jay White just slicing and dicing, basically telling MJF, you're not the hero, Max. You're the villain. You've always been the villain. And you know what? Max is such a good fucking heel. I will defend heel MJF till the end of time. I understand why Max is doing this. We've talked about it in the past. You know, wanting to flex his babyface muscles, showing that he can do it all, you know, kind of thing. That's fine. But he is so good as a heel. Like, so tremendously good. And he's told us, Jay White says, you know, that he's not the people's hero or their scumbag. And that his days of AEW champion are numbered. And he gets the ass boys and to hit Juice Robinson to attack him. But they overwhelm Max. No one comes out to save him. He eats a Blade Runner. Bullet Club stands tall. In another era, I would tell you that's probably meaningless, but I guess we all know what the result of the pay-per-view is going to be. I enjoyed this Dynamite. We're not going to call it an all-timer. We're not going to call it great. I think it was a good little Dynamite. I enjoyed it. You know, bare minimum nonsense with a lot of stuff that I liked. Some quibbles, as you saw as we were going along. Nothing that stands out. Nothing that you're like, oh, this was absolutely tremendous. But I had a good time. I had a good time watching pro wrestling with this 2 hours of Dynamite. So there you go. That's the review. Suck it. No, don't, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for watching my dog here in the background. Just having a complete there. Now she stretches. She finally does something the entire video, and it's a stretch. Good for you, Juno. Living the life. I will be back next Tuesday for another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. No, there will not be a collision review this week. As mentioned on previous occasions of my various podcast endeavors, I will not, I won't be, since, you know, the Friday night collision and then leading into Full Gear, look, you know, my collision review is going to become irrelevant within like 2 hours. So there's no, you don't want that. No one wants that. It's fine. We'll move on. We'll come back with the collision review in 2 weeks at this point. But as for now, we're wrapping it up. We're saying tally-ho and thank you very much for being here. Apologies once again for coming in so late, but we'll see each other very soon. Next Tuesday at the latest. In the meantime, I'll see you next time.